Hey there, and welcome to Crosshairs Radio, episode 33. On today's show, we do another episode of They Don't Do That in Europe, which means we bring in Scott Diedenbach and David Palin, formerly of the Cyclocross Network and Cyclocross Today, to talk about the new cyclocross rules that the UCI just released. So this means your dreaded radio rule, the update to the U-turn rule, the rule about tree logs and how they can be used as planks, and everything else, all the nitty and gritty we get into, both, yes, nitty and gritty, I said it. We get into both of those on all of the rule changes that happen. It's amazingly a pretty lively hour discussion of all of that, so it's great to have those guys back. Not really much else to tell you other than the book that I co-wrote with Dan Tilley that features Jeremy Powers and photography by Bruce Buckley, Skills, Drills, and Bellyaches, a Cyclocross Primer. Sales on that starting to pick up again, as they do about this time every year. You can get your copy by going to cyclocrossbook.com. Lots of information on the book, samples, and also an order link. You can also go to amazon.com. It is available there as well. Speaking of Jeremy Powers, Washington, D.C. Cyclocross Clinic, August 12th through 14th. Go to bikereg.com, type in Jeremy Powers or D.C. Cross Camp, Cyclocross Camp, and you should get to there, to that link. Please sign up for that. And Wide Angle Podium Network, go check out all of the shows available for there. Become a member, support the podcast about cycling. That's what makes all of this magic possible. Oh, that was fun. Anyway, and that's about it. Oh, here we go. Another They Don't Do That in Europe. As always, with these shows, I'm going to hand the controls over to Scott, and I'm going to do that right now.
All right. Welcome back for another edition of They Don't Do That in Europe. With me, as always, on the right, Mr. David Palin.
On the right?
I told you you're going to be on the left, and you're on the right. And
I'm on the right.
With us, as always, on the left, Bill Shiken.
Always keeping us on our toes, Scott.
Mixing it up real well.
Keeping it real.
So, guys, we are having another kind of off-season show because we had a big, well, it happens every time this every year around this time. The new rules come out for cyclocross, so we thought we would gather together and rap about those a little bit. But first, I got to tell you guys a quick story.
Go.
Are you ready?
Yes.
So, you know, we live out here in Michigan. We are very close to MIS Speedway, right? The big super speedway that NASCAR uses. This is so cool. And they came out here. I don't even pay attention to the NASCAR races anymore, but after the race was on Sunday. After the race, I believe it was the next day, Jimmy Johnson puts out a tweet, you know, big time NASCAR driver, right? Jimmy Johnson puts out a tweet of him and all his crew. And I think there was even a couple other drivers in there out on, are you ready for this? A 73-mile gravel grinder bike ride on cross.
By your house?
Right. I mean, right on the dirt roads that go right through here, yep. David. How awesome is that?
Well, he's big into cycling.
Yeah, those guys are huge, man.
They did a big benefit ride down in Florida, I believe.
Yeah.
I think it was like, yeah, or Florida or North Carolina or something like, yeah, like over 100 miles, like 120, 130 miles.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought it was so cool.
Yeah, that's great. I love it. I follow him on Twitter now because of that.
Yeah, it wasn't like they just went out and did 10 or 20. I mean, they went out serious, you know, 73 miles. Crushing it on the awesome gravel grinder roads that we got here. So that was very cool. And then the other quick little tidbit that I wanted to mention is people, if they notice the Providence race, as you guys know, the KMC Cyclocross Festival was not on the original UCI calendar. And that is now, and we were all, you know, everybody kind of suspected, all right, it's probably going to be October 1st and 2nd. That's where it should be, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it still wasn't there for a few months. It is now on the schedule.
It sounds so like China also.
China is on the schedule.
It was on the schedule. Then that wasn't there before.
The first race is Australia Nationals. And then the next race, there's two races in Beijing and then Rochester. So that's the way it reads right now.
Outstanding.
So all right, where does Providence fit with Gloucester now?
So week in between, right?
Yeah, there's still a
Charm
week
City.
In between. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that'll be interesting to see how that all plays out.
I know there was some speculation that maybe Charm City would get the first and second and switch it around, but that didn't happen.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go on to talk about rules because we have all, man, Twitter has been abuzz with all the rule talking, Bill. What's going on, man?
Yes.
I thought my first reading of these rules was, oh, these are kind of benign. And then, no. There's all this controversy going on. So,
well,
I think.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say there are ones that on their face, and I think just from people's preconceived attitudes towards how some of these things are used in other disciplines, definitely got people's hackles up.
Yes. Man, oh, man. Okay, so what we're going to do, we're just going to start at the beginning and go through all the changes one at a time. Does that sound good? If it's something real quick, we can just mention it and skip on and go like that. So the first one, as you scroll down, is rule 5.1.001, and that is a new thing with the UCI-recognized teams that basically states UCI road teams and UCI mountain bike teams are now recognized and can ride in cyclocross races.
Which is great.
Was there a reason that wouldn't be allowed in the past?
I think it was just, it's probably...
If you were a recognized UCI team, you wanted to be put someone into cross, you weren't allowed to do it?
It was because I'm sure the team license had what discipline it was for, right? So...
But yeah, definitely, you know, Stibar was out there in his ETIX kit, right?
Sure. Yeah, that's true. So I don't know how this. Maybe this just clarifies something that was already going on, and they just want to make it, you know,
and
obvious and clear.
Until January of 2017, Lars Vanderhaar is on a road team.
Right, but that's the
didn't stop him from riding last year, as I remember. Right.
That's the other way, though. A cross rider, right? Because he was wearing what was he wearing? He wasn't wearing his cross stuff in the road on the road, was he?
Well. I think it's the same kit, but it's because he had either he always had like the national.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Right. Okay. Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe it's just clarifying. You know.
I think we're gonna have that same sort of debate for every one of these rules on why is this different now.
Yeah. Right. Because people are like, wasn't that already going on?
Well, stay tuned for that, listeners.
And that is part of I think one of the things you were talking about, Bill. We're talking about is enforcement. This is part of the problem. This is part of why this is always confusing. And everybody is like, what's going on? And it creates all this turmoil because none of this stuff is ever really enforced how it appears it should be based on the wording of the rules, right?
Yeah. If there are a couple things going on. First off, although we have this here and it looks official and it's all in English and we're reading all of these rules, they started
in red.
In red for the new ones, yes. It started in French. And then somebody appointed by the UCI was told to translate them all to English.
Right.
So
and
we're
not
getting...
They did not do a great job.
Yeah, but even if they did, it's not, you know, even if they did the best job in the world, you can read stuff into here that the UCI may not have necessarily known was going to be interpreted the way it's being interpreted.
Yeah, well...
So it's hard to know in some of these instances.
I'd be fine with all that. The problem is the UCI has declared English is the language of choice, right, for the UCI?
Yeah. So,
So it should be written in English. It should be the most clear.
And I think that some of it is why we get these clarifications, too. Maybe they're trying to fix that. The other part that you brought up about enforcement, if you want to play a really fun drinking game, watch as if there are unfun ones. Sit down with a UCI promoter and watch any European World Cup, UCI C1, whatever race, and drink every time they say, we wouldn't be allowed to do that in our race.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, because it's a question of enforcement. And in the U.S., we have UCI commissaires who are who like rules, and they're very stringent about it. You can't do that. You can't do that. You can't do that. It doesn't seem like every European race gets that same level of enforcement. There's a lot more, you know, bending of the rules. So the main thing I see with a lot of these rules and what I see on Twitter and everything is like, well, it's going to be impossible to enforce that. And I disagree with that 1,000%. All of these are enforceable if you want to enforce them.
If you choose to do so. Yes. Yeah, I completely agree.
And we'll get to them. You know, they're really easy ways to enforce, you know, when we get to the U-turns and that kind of stuff.
I was just going
to
say you're foreshadowing really easy, the U-turn rule.
Yeah, ways to enforce these things. But
all right, well, let's move on. The next rule, in my opinion, all right, this is 5.1.004 for people following along at home.
Could follow along at home if you went to cxharris.com because I have them all listed out there and little
and
pictures
you can
of all
the PDF.
Of the
rules.
Yeah, you can
awesome.
Download the whole thing and then I have broken out all of the new rule changes.
Yeah.
So we'll wait while you guys all
yeah.
print that off.
Yeah. We'll take a second.
In my opinion, this rule 5.1.004 is the most important change that they made, and that is for all cyclocross events registered on the international calendar, the organizer must also organize a women race. Yeah, you know, up until now, it's been mandatory for C1s.
Yep. So that's
now,
the change.
If it's on the calendar, boom.
That's the change. And right after that line, there's a strikeout line that says for an event registered in class one. So they're making it perfectly clear that
right.
it no longer just applies to C1 races. It applies to all
any
races.
Race on the calendar.
Any
yep.
race on C2. The UCI international calendar.
Yeah. To me, this is the most important rule change of all of them. I think this is a great rule, and it's just, you know, it's not going to really have much effect here in the U.S. There is no such thing as a C2 without a women's race here, right? They all have them.
Right.
But it's a shame that you got to state this, but I'm glad they did, and now it's cut and dry.
Yeah, and I think that also it's good that we got to this early because I think that there are things with women's racing that still need to be fixed. And
uh-huh.
there was an opportunity to fix some of those things this time around, and we're still not there. This did get done. So we have to applaud the progress that has been made. And this, I agree with you. This is huge.
Yeah,
I agree with both of you. I find it interesting that it doesn't say equal payouts somewhere in here.
Well, that would be the part that I'm talking about where there's still work to be done.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I mean, I would have to, just to play devil's advocate on my own points and my own thinking on this, is the market has to bear that as well. If people don't want to see it and don't want to pay for it and don't want to promote it and support it, then... Well,
but
maybe there is not.
I think it was CX Stats, Cyclocross Stats. Those guys, I think, had something, or somebody else had something, where they showed the TV ratings. They showed the number of eyeballs who tuned in for the women's races, and it was hundreds of thousands. So
yeah.
the market is there.
And
yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. So I think that could have been an argument, but I think last year when we had the B-Post and these other series who finally integrated a women's series into their series and televised it, that the eyeballs were there. So sponsors can't say nobody's watching this because it's there, so the equal money should be there as well.
And if anything, this new rule will actually help that situation even more, right? If it's already where it is now you have even more access to women's racing. With, you know, even in the C2 races, and that situation, this rule will only improve that situation, in my opinion.
Yeah, the next thing that they have to add to that race, which they've done, or to that rule, that which they've done with the World Cups, is the daily schedule.
You mean placement of the events?
Correct.
Within the day's calendar? Yeah.
Correct.
Doesn't that come later on in the rules, or is that just with specific...
Well,
it's
the
for,
only thing they
World
said
Cup.
Right under this
championships or something that
yeah,
they have to be.
Under this rule, it said in a continental champ, you can spread a continental championship over 2 days, and the elite men and elite women can be on the second day together.
Right. That's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's might be what you're
and the
about.
World Cup schedule changed so that the women aren't first thing in the morning.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
And that's the type of thing where the women have to be in prime time along with the men.
Yes. I agree. All right. Anything?
Well, for an opportunistic sponsor or, you know, someone or advertiser, there's a huge opportunity there. I mean, like you said, the data shows that there's as many eyeballs. You want to get your product out there. there's where your support should be.
Absolutely.
Marketing genius, free of charge right there.
All right, moving on. Rule 5.1.018. And this is it, Bill. This is the U-turn. The heading even says U-turns. It's got its own designation, U-turns. All right. U-turns on the course shall be installed and protected, such as riders may not hold on the pole or on the barrier in the center of the U-turns. It's very difficult to have a U-turn without a pole in the center, right? If it's a true U-turn. So I think what we're probably going to end up having is a bunch of triangles again, right?
Well, that's it. Yep. And that's still a U-turn. You're still you're still going back on where you just came from. It's still a 180 turn. If you went on the outside of it, it still makes a 180 turn. It's just in the very middle. And this is what, and there's been a lot of, yay, the U-turn's back, but how are they going to enforce people not, you know, swinging on the center pole? It's impossible to enforce. It's like, no, you just don't have a center pole.
Yeah,
it's really easy. So, you do there is no change from last year to this year, and that's just not me speaking. You know, do you guys watch Game of Thrones?
Sure.
Yeah. So I have little birds. it's just going to be little triangles. It's a lot of to do over nothing. And the other thing was, like, somebody come out how somehow a rider was going to be penalized if they were swinging on a U-turn. No riders are being penalized. Nobody's watching the U-turns. Nothing's happening. It is up to the course organized to set up a course that does not have a U-turn that somebody can, you know, swing around that pole, the picket fence style.
And here's a question. Another question I have is, why does it matter if they grab the pole?
That I from what I have been led to understand is that it came from riders.
Oh, really?
That it was a rider request.
I could see that,
stop that from happening. So,
like, go ahead.
Yeah, just so that it took that opportunity away. It took that, I guess, that fight for that center line, whatever the case may be. That's where this started from. The UCI just didn't say we're not going to do this anymore. This did come from riders.
Gotcha. If you have that center line, it gives an unfair advantage to that line over some other line.
Yeah, which isn't really unfair because that's what you're fighting for, and that's what we love
about cyclocross. That's what cross is, right?
Yeah, is getting to that first. And yeah, right. I mean,
but having that hand, that arm, that like straight arm across in front of you can be.
I'll tell you another thing that may have been behind that is that you look at what we've seen in the last few years, just as bike weights continue to go down and down and down. You had like the Vermeers, you had things like that. So it's not the riding and grabbing the pole, but it's when the riders are off their bikes and then they are just, you know,
that's a really good point.
Swinging their bikes around like they're about to throw a discus.
Yeah, I mean, they're creating a radius there of about 15 feet, you know, with their bike fully extended, their arm, both arms out, you know,
right.
That's a long
radius. So
if
you don't have, and that's the instance where if you don't have something to grab onto, you can't really do that with your bike. So
yeah,
it may, and this part I do not know, but it may have been instances like that, that some riders were like, this is just ridiculous.
Yeah. No, you know what? That's a really good point that I hadn't thought of. And I think now that I can see and that I would agree with it, that's kind of, it's because that's kind of dangerous too, guys, you know, whipping their bike.
So basically you're going to see a post, a meter of fabric or tape, another post, and then a center post behind that little triangle. They'll go around that. And that's what we're going to have. Just like we had this year.
We're
supposed to be. And the other part of this that I see is the argument, well, it's impossible to enforce. And I understood what, you know, people sort of had this convoluted thing that somehow riders were going to be penalized, which they're not. And yes, then you would need an official at every U-turn.
Right.
Making sure nobody grabbed a post. But what the enforcement is that what's supposed to happen before you have a UCI race, as a race organizer, the day before or week before, if you're that lucky to have the official in town and also be set up, you walk around with your UCI official.
Right.
And you look at every turn and you look at every feature on the course and you make sure that all of the UCI rules are met. Right. And that's where I'd go back to that drinking game, that in the U.S., And I can tell you this from experience, the officials are really strict and they are going to make sure everything is within the letter of the law. And I understand it from their perspective because we are in a position, a disadvantaged position here. You know, the power of the sport is in Europe. So yes, we want to make sure all our I's are dotted, all our T's are crossed, and we are doing everything to the letter of the law because we don't want those races to disappear.
Right.
So we walk through. You know, I had to do it at DCCX. You know, me and my co-promoters, there was a tree that we were going around. I was like, that's too much like a U-turn. We had to change it. You know, we had to reroute the course. Not a problem. Uh-huh. We did it. You know, we had a turn that was too tight at the end of the start. Make this, you know, X degrees wider, you know, and flatten it out a little bit. We did it. So yep, that's your enforcement. And every race is supposed to do that. And if they do, then you don't have, then the enforcement's easy because the course is already meeting all the rules by the time the riders get on there. So, this whole thing impossible to enforce, I think is just crap.
Well, as a New Englander, I'll tell you the way the lobstermen enforce those kinds of rules with their lines, that the ropes from the buoys down to their lobster pots, they entwist broken glass and shards of metal. You could do that on the post.
Well, that was, you know,
that'll be grabbing.
That was my first response, and I had a picture of a cat guard for fences to stop cats from sitting on their fence. It was just all these spikes, and I was like, well, you just turn that on its side and put it on there.
I think they should have one of those cat things that's like the air sprayer with an electronic. So if you reach out for it, it like gives you a blast of like, like
there you
cold
go,
air or something.
Grease the pole.
Right. So, all right. Anything else on U-turns? We'll see. I don't think it's going to change much this year. So
I don't either. I think they tried to clarify it and, you know, it just became more muddled. Hey, they just didn't use the word U-turn.
It gave us lots of stuff to talk about.
It was good.
Yeah.
Thank you, UCI.
All right, moving on. Rule 5.1.020. This is just the start section rule, and this is just a strikeout. They striked out that the start banner shall be erected at least 2.5 meters above the ground over the start line and shall cover the whole width of the start section.
Okay, remember that whole rant I went on how in the U.S. we follow all the rules because we want to... I don't know a race that has a start banner to... They're finish banners. If you stage,
Start finish. I mean, if you stage them different,
that's what I'm saying. If you stage with a prologue,
yeah.
Where's a race that has a start banner?
You know, you're right. I think you're right.
They might
now
have
that
flags. They may have start flags so people know where to go.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyways, okay. It's just,
but it doesn't matter because it's not a rule anymore.
Yeah, so now they can be really low, right? So you can start out with like a limbo in the beginning. Le Mans style or Grand Prix, get a run, limbo under, and then get to your bike.
All right, rule 5.1.024. And this is one I think we could cause some interesting changes because I want to talk about what we were talking about yesterday too, Bill, on Twitter. Either or both of the planks referred to above, they were talking about barriers, may be replaced by one or two tree logs, whichever the case may be. If a tree log is...
What, cheese logs from the mall or what? I don't understand tree logs.
Well, okay. I think they want them to be wood. If a tree log is used, its maximum thickness shall be below 40 centimeters. Otherwise, all rules applicable to the specifications of planks shall apply to tree logs as well. Bill, comments?
You know, I didn't... This is the first time realizing that you can have a mix and match. So you could have a traditional wooden plank and then, you know, followed up by a tree log.
Yeah.
Here, now this may be a translation issue, but just to play with it a little bit, it says either or both of the planks may be replaced by one or two tree logs. So if you replace both planks with two tree logs, you now have a four barrier run.
No, I think they just mean one log where each plank would be. You can either have...
Like I said, it may be a translation issue.
Right. I think...
I'll push this one right to the Supreme Court.
But, attorney,
Bill, what do you say?
I say in the paragraph above it says two.
But then it says either or both of the planks can be replaced by one or two logs. I'm going to replace both of
So you're going to replace each one with two logs?
Right.
Yeah. I got you. All right.
But Bill, like we were talking about on Twitter yesterday with Sven teaching barrier hopping to the juniors out at the UCI headquarters, which was very cool, by the way.
Yeah, it's great. We got a couple US guys, the Jam Fund guys over there participating in that camp, which was nice to see.
Very, very cool. You know, and we were talking about, well, you were tweeting about, and I was agreeing that this is now not a fluke skill. This is something, a training skill that you're going to have, right?
Yeah, it's not showboating. It's not a novelty. It's not jump it, ride it.
Right,
you know,
right.
And not every race, but at the top level of the sport, if you don't have that skill, you're going to, you know, that is going to be a disadvantage to you.
But a 40-centimeter log completely changes that skill. That's not a 2-inch wide board, right? Because a 40-centimeter log is also 40 centimeters wide, right?
Well, I guess you can also get on top of it, though, better.
It's easier to ride in some sense.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
You can ride over it.
It's a cool rule. I like the rule because it's more things that you have to overcome, I guess, is what I like about it. It's not just a simple, you know, here's some wooden barriers and everybody's learning to hop these very easily.
Get out your chainsaws. We're going to start dropping trees on the course.
So, and we'll be interested to see, you know, if some race organizers do mix it up, one plank, one log, two logs, whatever. We'll see what happens. So, comments, you guys? You're not as excited about that one as I am.
No, I think it's good. Any kind of change to the norm like this, you know, allowing, because we've always had trees out there, branches. I know Nittany for the longest time always had. That's actually one that this may affect, because they're going to have to, on day two of Nittany, there is always this tree that people have to ride over, you know, that fell in a storm how many years ago. And it may be a little high.
Yeah. My question to you on that one, Bill, is I think there's a differentiation between man-made barriers. I mean, if you bring that log that day and drop it there, then I think you have one thing you have to follow. But if the course goes through where there is a log that has fallen, it's like part of the landscape, no?
I don't think anymore. Because now
you think that changes that?
Well, I mean, now you have a tree log rule.
Right.
See, I read this as a barrier rule. I read this as a man-made barrier versus the natural land barriers.
You also are going back to four barriers.
That is true. Let's get away from that.
So if one of the four is a natural fallen tree, then you can have five.
There you go. No.
I don't know. I don't know. The way I read it is that it may be a ruling for if it was there on purpose or if it was there naturally, you're going to have to treat them all as normal barriers.
Yeah.
Because to me, barriers is something you put in. That's how I've always looked at it.
I don't know.
If you say you're allowed to put two barriers on the course, then that's something that you bring in, you put the planks in, but you have to ride over roots. I mean, if you're only allowed one set of barriers,
I mean, there are other things.
Over is the barrier?
Yeah, and there are other things out there. It does bring up an interesting point because we have seen other features that are much higher that, you're right, are a part of the natural landscape, even if man-made on the course. You know, I think of like Charm City has these planters that are definitely above 40 centimeters that are used as barriers. So those have always been allowed.
Jingle Cross has had the telephone pole section for years.
Yeah,
right?
Well, that was one. Somebody was like, well, will they finally get rid of the Yule log section? Right. So
which I love. I think it's awesome.
Well, that's going to be an interesting one to watch, especially.
I don't think they'll have that as a
in
World
a
Cup.
World Cup race. It's probably not going to be there. But you look at Mall with the Tom Mason, I'm going to...
I was just
going to
bring that up.
I'm going to attack right now so I can hop over this wall.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to think, so maybe David, maybe you're right on this, because you have to think they're not getting rid of that.
Yeah.
Right, sure.
I mean, that's such a huge feature.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, moving on, rule 5.1.038, they added a nice sentence fragment to confuse us even more. I'm reading this verbatim, should a rider take the pit lane for any other reason the commissaires shall decide and the decision shall be final. This is the rule. A rider may only take the pit lane to change his bicycle, wheels, or for other mechanical assistance.
I see this rule as, you know, and mainly this started from the feed rule and then no more feeds. And then after, and even before that, the foot down rule, which was never a rule, but was always allowed, where you could ride, dismount, get back onto your same bike and use the pit lane as a regular race lane. As long as you did that, went through that pantomime.
Yeah.
And then we had the feed, you know, problem the year after that. And then now I think they're just going, okay, yes, you're going to argue this A, B, C, D, E. It's up to the official. The official has the power to make that judgment call if your stop is allowable or not, no matter what the circumstance may be.
Yeah, I think the gist of it is, like you said, they're just trying to get to the point where the pit official is the one that makes the decision. Once that they've made that decision, that's it. We're not going to entertain seven, you know, arguments forever about no, I didn't, yes, you did kind of stuff. This is just the do-all. But again, a sentence fragment. It would have been nice if it was a little bit crisper.
Right. So. And again, you know, and that's the problem here, because I really believe that, you know, and this happens. There is a big management meeting, all of the UCI representatives. We have people from the U.S. Every, you know, nation is there. There are rider representatives for the management committee. They all get together and they discuss all of this stuff and they try to figure out what these rule changes are going to be. And I think in that meeting, it was all crystal clear. And then it's, of course, you know...
Right.
Writing that down and sending it out, and that's when you always realize where crystal clear becomes foggy.
All right, rule 5.1.041. This is a controversial one. This is about attendance. There's some previous text here, and then the addition is, for the UCI Cyclocross World Cup and World Championships, accreditations for riders, paramedical assistant, and two mechanics will be distributed by commissaires exclusively. After that, the licenses check for each paramedical assistant and the mechanics has been completed. I have no idea what that ending means.
I think it's not after that. It's after that the.
So, after that the.
So you could even take the that out. And it's like after the license check of each paramedical assistant. So we'll give you your license. We'll give you your accreditation after we check that you have a license.
Gotcha.
Oh, okay. Now I understand it.
All right.
What kind of license? Does it have to be, I mean, is it issued by UCI?
Yes.
By the
it
local...
is a support staff license issued by UCI.
Okay.
And,
right.
And
so,
Scott can tell you how much that costs.
So that cost is $200. Okay. I don't have a problem with this rule. I don't have a problem having to have licensed people or in the past. I think there's all kinds of good things that can, that can be its insurance issue, you know, blah, 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 blah. But $200 is ridiculous. Because especially this first year, because for people that want to race World Cups, that's basically $400 because it expires December 31st, 2016.
Oh, I didn't realize that. So you're
If you're going to race World Cups in 2017, you got to fork out another $200.
Right. So those first couple, the US World Cups.
Yep.
Yeah, even how many are there more than that? Yeah, so like it's like half and half, right? If you're going to do a full World Cup schedule, you have to buy that license twice.
So what they need to do this first year, when I got my USAC mechanics license, right? You did the clinic, you go to Colorado, you do all the stuff, you go through all the, they give you the opportunity to purchase your license right there. So you don't have to do it over the mail or on the website or anything. Once you've passed the thing and are ready to leave, you can buy your license and it is good until December 31st of the next year. Right. So that you don't have to double pay right away. Right. And they could do the same thing here. This first instance of this, if you buy one this year, it's good till December 31st, 2017. And then it's basically 200, you know, and then at the end of 2017, you pay another $200 and you're paying $200 a year after that. Got what I'm saying? So you don't have this double payment right at the beginning. That's $400 per mechanic for this season if you're going to race World Cups.
Yeah.
And how many mechanics would you have in
the race? Most people are going to have two, right?
So there's $800.
$800.
You know, and again, this
just
is...
take it out of your big bonus checks that you're making for racing these races.
$800 for every racer.
Well, and if you want to, if you want a third person, if you want that paramedical assistant, you know, a soigneur basically in there as well, that's another $200 or $400. Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's a lot.
And you know, I see the arguments, you know, there are a number of arguments we need to work through, but let's just talk about the cost first, where people are like, well, if you're racing at the World Cup level, and again, this is only elites. This does not, U23s, juniors, right, doesn't apply to them. This is just for the elites. They're like, well, if you're racing at that level, you should have enough money to do that. And I think that's crap.
I agree.
Especially in cyclocross. I mean, we always look at cyclocross, and you look at worldwide, there may be, what, 30 people who make a decent living racing, yeah, cyclocross in the world. Mm-hmm. And everybody, yeah, else is doing, you know, some, there's definitely a level under that who are doing okay or getting by.
Yeah, basically near poverty level,
but getting by. And then there are people who are just losing money. I mean, outright, right, losing money. And that,
yes,
and that's it. And it's unfair to say, well, if you're racing at that level, you should have the sponsors and the money.
That's just not true. I'm telling you right now, that's not realistic.
There's a women.
Whether you should or you shouldn't, it's real unrealistic to expect that many people do.
Yeah, people think that every racer in a World Cup elite race is getting enough money from sponsors to pay their ticket for the year. That's just not true.
Right. And I heard from, you know, folks in Ireland, not exactly a cyclocross hotbed as these things go, who are going over there, yep, who have the opportunity to race in the World Cups. And that's a hardship for them.
Yep.
That
all
amount
the
of money
Australians,
is a hardship.
Same deal.
Yeah. And it's also that you then have to, it's harder to be in country finding somebody to work for you on the day.
Yes.
If they, right, don't have
you've
that
limited,
license.
You, for people that are going to go over and try and hire somebody, you've limited that pool significantly.
So a couple other things. One about what you were talking, just to add on what you were saying with the licensing process, is that this is something, and the forms are I'll put it on the website as well, but it's in my Twitter feed. The link, you can just get a straight link to the form. If you're in the U.S. Federation, you go through USA Cycling, they send it to the UCI, and then you get your license after that. It's not something issued by USA Cycling. They're just facilitating it as your federation. That being said, it's not like buying an annual license. You don't push a button and you have it. So, right, give yourself some lead time because it
is
may take
certification process, or what is it, Bill, that takes the time?
That I think Scott could talk to. I mean, for the US, you had to take that course, right?
Well, that's for a USAC mechanics license. Okay. I don't believe that you have to have that.
No, they just
want
your money. They just want your money.
Yeah, I think you just need some kind of USA Cycling license, period. It can, yep, be any USA Cycling license. They ask you for that, and then they ask you for the UCI team that you are. It doesn't even say that you're like... it asks you for the team that has a UCI association.
Right.
That's what they want to know.
So,
which is interesting, because that comes back to your point, Bill. If I want to be a private, you know, gun for hire or wrench for hire, I'm not affiliated with a team.
Right.
Or am I going to need a separate $200 license for each team that I work for?
No. You will just have a UCI license. Right. You know, and there was some inthemud.cx on Twitter. We were sort of going back and forth on this. And I don't know if there's confusion on what, because they're like, well, Belgian, you know, mechanics licenses are cheaper in Belgium. And I'm like, but I think that's still a separate thing. That's like what you did, Scott, right? That was USAC,
yes,
certified, yes, license. You still need this UCI license, and I,
correct,
am going to assume, even if it's euros or dollars, US dollars, it's going to be the same amount. It's going to be what the equivalent of, yeah, $200. Yeah. They were saying that, you know, we needed that last year, and, you know, they were asking for it at Worlds, asking for it wherever. That may have been the case, but, and I think maybe that's why, one of the reasons it is now codified, it is in print, saying everybody needs this. And again, it's a question of enforcement. You know, mm-hmm, Zach McDonald was on Twitter. He's like, I just mean mugged it, had my bike on my shoulder, walked into the pit, nobody stopped me.
Right.
That's fine. And that still may happen. We don't, right, know. But, you know, if they want to enforce it, it's going to be enforceable. And it would stink to be in a position where your staff is not licensed and you get stopped and then you have nobody in the pits.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
I'm sorry. I need to add one more thing that's very important about this. One of the reasons that this rule exists, and again, from those little birds, a couple people.
Well, that's what I want to talk about. Is there are positives to this. So let's kind of spend some time on that.
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, and I'll just throw it out there and you all can know. It's the Femke rule.
Yes.
This is the Femke rule.
I completely agree.
And that was the discussion when this came up.
It gives accountability to who's in the pits.
Right. So her excuse, and if people don't know what we're talking about, the Femke Van Dreschen, when she had her bike with the motor where she doesn't know how it got into the pits, this is taking care of that situation where everybody is accountable who is in that tech zone.
Yes. Yeah, I don't have a problem with the rule. I have a problem with the amount. I think things to legitimize who is in the pit are needed. We're getting to the point where it'll become a problem and there needs to be some kind of enforcement, and I've got no problem with that.
With regards to what, Scott? With numbers? How many people are in the pits?
There's people in the pits who shouldn't be there. They're not there for supporting someone. They're just there hanging out, you know? And I think, too, and I know they do this a lot in Europe, is they actually have your pit pass is specific to your riders, right? You get a women elite pit pass. So you can only be in there for your specific race. Right, you can't just wander in there because you had a previous racer, and now you know you're standing there because your buddy is there, and you're talking, and people are trying to go back and forth, and you know they got to move around you every single time, and blah 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 blah. So, I think something we need to start thinking about some kind of regulation in the pit. But again, Bill, it comes down to it needs to be enforced.
So. Right. So.
All right. Anything else you want to say about that?
What's a paramedical assistant?
One.
I mean, really, in the pits, why do you need a paramedical assistant?
I don't know. There might be somebody out there using something like that. I don't know if people have breathing issues, you know, that they have somebody that's, you know, there to assist them or what. I don't know.
Is that another name for team manager? I mean, do those guys have to get licenses? Because they always seem to be hanging out in the tech zone, hanging over the barrier.
Yeah, I mean, I would hope so. If they're going to be in the pit, then they need to be one of the licenses. So, I think that would be it. But you know, they don't need to be in the pit. They can be just opposite the pit and still yell the same thing at the riders. So. All right, moving on. Duration of events. 5.1.
Well, wait a second, Scott, because you know we all know that's not even going to be an issue anymore when we get to this last rule.
Which one?
About yelling at riders, but
yeah. All right, you're gonna have to tell me when we get there.
All right.
Duration. Sit down and get you my seat again.
Duration. There was a clarification for duration. There was a clarification that says the exact same thing as the strikeout, almost.
Yes.
The duration must be between 40 and 50 minutes during elite women's events, and for events in which women elite and women under 23 ride together, the duration must be between 40 and 50 minutes. The previous one said a minimum of 40 minutes, but not exceed 50 minutes.
I don't know the difference.
I don't know the difference.
And I have another question. I was hoping you'd answer that for me, Bill, as the attorney on board, but let's go back to the whole thing about duration of events.
Yeah.
So for the U23 women's races, as close as possible to 40 minutes. For junior men's events, as close as possible to 40 minutes. For men's events, as close as possible to 50 minutes for U23 men. As close as possible to 60 minutes for the elite men's and for events in which elite and men U23 ride together.
Yes.
So in each case, you're saying be as close to the X, whether it's 40, 50, or 60 minutes. Then for the women's race, they say it has to be between 40 and 50 minutes.
It is a convoluted compromise. I think what it comes down to, and again, this is from what I've heard on this issue, is that for whatever reason, the UCI Management Committee is still not at a place where they are comfortable saying women's races are 50 minutes long. And that's
because they're not strong enough. Because whatever
it is,
go to the bathroom during the race.
I
still can't get my mind around that. But why not say 45 minutes?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Don't either. They'd rather talk about radios.
You know, honestly, that's what it was. Women marathon runners.
That was the explanation that I was given, was because they don't want to give women 50 minutes.
Okay, enough said.
So that's why we have it. And so right now it has to, you know, if you read, again, we're going with, you know, translation and interpretation and everything, but technically it has to be either 41 through 49 minutes.
Right.
Because it has to be between 40 and 50.
Yeah.
So if you go to 50, you've gone over.
Right.
So women's races will now be 41 to 49 minutes long.
All right. Rule 5.1.059.
Hey, he wanted to hear the lawyer answer.
What?
He wanted to hear the lawyer answer.
There you go.
That's David.
Here. This is what I'm talking about. This is the pit one. Why they don't have to be yelling anymore because of this.
Oh, right. Well, no.
I know.
Yeah, it's all right. Let me read it first. This, in my opinion, is a catastrophe. 5.1.059 in race communications. The use of the first line, which is the old rule that says the use of radio links or other remote means of communication with riders is forbidden. For the UCI Cyclocross World Cup and World Championships, men elite and women races, which I wish they would. Never mind. Only the use of radio communication from the rider to his/her mechanics is allowed. The use of radio communication from staff to the rider is forbidden. The use of such a system is subject to any relevant legal provisions. I think the last part is you got to be within the local legal. It has to be a legal radio. You can't be broadcasting something without the right licenses to be broadcasting. So that part again.
Need to be a ham operator.
We do not need radios in cyclocross. Oh my God.
So first off, just to where you pause there, you know, I think that the reason it doesn't say elite women is because in these World Cup races, the U23s are going to be riding with the elites. Not in World Championship,
well,
but World Cup.
Well, that's all through this thing. I don't know if you saw it. They constantly say men, elite, and women, instead of just saying elite men and women or elite men and elite women to make it really clear.
But that's, well, I mean, I agree that it should say elite women, but then they'd also have to include U23 women.
Right.
Unless you're saying that.
No, I'm saying that.
That they are elite as well, which I'd agree. They're just younger, but then because then you're saying, well, aren't the U23 men elite? It's a weird thing.
Yeah, well, it's not just in this rule. It's in all through the whole thing. It says every time they translated it, they translated it to men, elite, and women.
Yeah.
And now that we have U23 women, that should be, you know, it should say elite men and women.
It does say during elite women and women under 23. So maybe just use that language again.
Right. It just makes it confusing. But anyways, that's not
radios.
The point. The point is, what do you guys think about radios in cyclocross? We'll get to how useless this rule is because it's only one way communication in a second. But let's just
make sure that we highlight a couple things that I think people hear but don't want to hear when their ire is raised over this issue. First off, only World Cup races.
Yes, and World Championship.
So I heard some stuff was like, well, what about the time bonuses and the B Post Trophy? This is where it's going to be important. I'm like,
doesn't matter.
Not applicable. For many reasons. First, because they're not allowed in those races. Second, it is supposed to be one-way communication. So it is stated as a mechanic, not staff. Only a mechanic is allowed to have a radio, and they are only allowed to listen. It is a one-way transmission from rider to mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I believe that this rule was put into place, and again, little birds, I can tell you that the people who wanted this rule were, again, riders at the highest level, let's say that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it is for, since it has become, in their eyes, this sport has become so precise that if they are on a bike and let's say they are running 22 PSI, but they know for that course they need 20 PSI. They want to make sure that the bike that they change to already has that.
Yes.
So when they get on it, so they don't have to yell it when they're in the pit for the next time.
Right.
So it's another bike exchange away.
That is the only use I can see.
Yes.
For this rule.
Or change tires, or just say what tires they want in general.
Do not take my explanation as an endorsement.
No, I know.
I am just trying to explain for people why it is that riders at the highest level wanted this rule in place.
Yeah. Because you have an entire bike you can give them, the only thing I can see is, like you said, Bill, tire pressure or tire tread, right?
Right.
That's the only useful information I think a rider can communicate to the mechanic in a one-way conversation like that.
Yeah, I had a fun exchange with Nikki Harris about this, who she replied to when I first tweeted this. I was like, don't expect me to talk to them. And I'm like, well, no, she said, don't expect me to listen to them.
Right.
And I said, well, as the rule's written, it shouldn't be an issue because you're going to be the only one talking. She's like, well, don't expect that either. And I was like, okay. And she was like 180 beats per minute.
Yeah.
Meaning she wasn't going to be able to talk anyway. So.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. I thought she was going to be like communicating.
No. She's like, I'm going to be so like in the red that I won't be able to, push a radio button or talk anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, from a safety standpoint, I guess you could have that it automatically picks up when you're talking, but there's so much background noise that would seem kind of counterproductive. But to take one hand off the bars when you're in the middle of a race to talk to your mechanic, I don't know about the safety on that.
Yeah. Well, there was a this Kickstarter that just I saw yesterday, which I put on Twitter. I don't know if you saw it. It was basically these guys that have GoPros now, and the trigger is sort of like a camelback. So it is a cable from the camera to your mouth. So then you bite down when you want to start your camera and you bite. So maybe they'll just like ride around with like little camelback cables in their mouth. And that'll, they bite down when they want to talk for the radio.
That's right. So clench their teeth and then at 180 beats per minute, talk. Clench their teeth.
But this is the thing. So this is my big problem is, so if you have, this is part of the sport, right? This is
yes and no, Scott. I mean, we don't use down tube shifters.
Having to ride on maybe, the pressure that you don't love for another half lap, right? You go by the pit, you can yell what you want the pressure at, right? And they can have it set up for you in the next half lap or the tire or whatever. To me, is not that big a deal.
Right.
Deal with that.
And also,
that's
well
and good at Matt Anthony's cyclocross race in Detroit when the elites are going out there for their case of beer or whatever. But I understand the point of them wanting, whether or not I agree they should get it. But I understand the point when this is your means of income and you have the possibility where it makes a big difference, that you're going to want every opportunity to communicate.
But as long as it's the same for everyone, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Here's why I think this is a non-issue. If the radios are there or they're not there, I guess in a perfect world, I would prefer they don't be there. But you could not go on Facebook or Twitter, if it wasn't a political rant, it was why I stopped watching road racing, and what killed road racing was when they had radios in there and the radios neutered the sport, and it was crappy to watch because every breakaway was going to get caught and it just ruined the sport for me, and now they're going to do this in cyclocross. The way the rule's written, that's nonsense, because that's not going to happen.
Right.
It's only one way. You're not going to be able to, and it's also, you're still not going to be able to, do you think that Sven didn't know how far people were ahead of him because he had his chalkboard guy with gaps every lap? I mean, riders do that. They have their little F1 boards and they're showing gaps. So that information is still getting there. They could even look over their shoulder and look at the enormous TV display that's going to show it there. So that argument, I think, is I understand it's a fun rant, and we all like to rant, but I don't think it holds much water. I think that in my argument about how enforcement means you just enforce, this is where it becomes a little more difficult, unless everybody has to, you know, have their radios checked before the race. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was joking that maybe the UCI could come up with another iPad app to check to make sure that radios are one way.
But, yeah, because that whole one-way communication issue is an issue, right?
But the other way...
But now you also have scanners.
The other way to do it, since we're already in these other rules giving this pit official more power, it's pretty easy to see if somebody's in their pits, you know, especially other teams will complain.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's going to be, if you see a guy jawing into a radio... He's breaking the rule.
Well, all you got to do is...
With a Bluetooth earpiece, you just talk.
But all you got to do is say that riders can't have an earpiece, right? They can only have a mic.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't matter if the pit's talking because nobody can hear him.
Right.
So as long as no riders have an earpiece and they only have a mic... Then...
They're gonna hide it in their seat tube.
That's it. But they'll be scanning for batteries anyway.
Here's another problem. You know, you got a radio... I don't know. Is bike shouldering going to be, you know... How's the radio going to interfere with bike shouldering? I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe not.
You got to hold like one hand up to get better reception. Or something.
The metal frames are going to return because they have a better reception.
Well, what I do look forward to seeing is when guys ride by the tech zone, instead of just throwing their glasses over, they're going to be
gonna
like
throw
throwing
radio
packs over. It's going to be pew!
Okay, moving on. Rule 5.3.019. For each race and each race category of the UCI Cyclocross World Cup, the UCI shall award a prize money to the rider who will have recorded the fastest lap time as delivered by the timekeeping company. The prize is fixed by the UCI financial obligations. Cool rule.
I think that's great.
Yeah.
I'm all for preams in cyclocross.
Absolutely. I think, and now this rule was added, well, it's in the new rules, but you said, Bill, there was like a supplement earlier that this came out.
Yeah, I actually didn't see it. I'm going to have to add it to my post because, yeah, about a week before the UCI, because this was something that, as opposed to these rules that all come out without statement, no statement from the UCI, no press release, nothing. If the only reason I knew about it and was able to get it out there first was because I got it as a UCI promoter.
Right.
And just as a heads up, you know, that's part of what our federation is doing for us. As a head up, go look at these rules. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, look at that. And then it was crazy because I put it on there and like Matthew Vanderpoel and, you know, and Nikki Harris and all of these like top riders are like, radios?
What?
Like, you guys should know this stuff.
Right.
But
it just goes to show, Bill, how on top of your game you are.
I was happy with that one. So, but regardless of that, this was something that they were proud of and wanted to get out there and felt was non-controversial, so they had a little press release and a statement last week.
Yeah. And I think it's cool. It could lead to some really cool racing moments. So I got no problem with it. I really like it. So, anything that's going to give riders more money, I like it.
Yes, and equal.
And equal across the board. So, okay, 5.3.023, leader's skin suit. A leader's skin suit shall also be awarded to the best women U23 rider as defined per Article 5, blah, 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 in the women individual classification of the UCI Cyclocross World Cup. But then the other thing that they added, and that's great, that's how it should be, for men elite and women... races of the UCI Cyclocross World Cup, comma, the leaders of the overall World Cup ranking are allowed to add the advertising of their team on the leader's equipment as per the article, and there's the sponsorship thing. Adding any team advertising on the leader's jersey is not allowed for the men junior, men U23, and women U23 categories. So it's basically saying elite men and elite women can put their sponsor's logo on the leader's jersey.
Thanks, great.
I agree.
No problem with that.
I got no problem with it. I think it's great. And
we're separating out the U23s because it's supposed to be pure and amateur, or why are we doing that?
Right.
Right. This is a test.
I think you're right, though, David. I think that's somewhere in this fantasy land that they operate in, they believe that may be the case.
Yeah, and right, and I would have no problem with that either if it's, you know, if it's across the board. I think, you know, one of the things it's going to help do is going to help acquire sponsors, right? Hey, if I got so-and-so and I'm going to be on the, you know, UCI Leaders jersey, our company logo, that's a, could be of some value and help people
get
sponsors.
Yeah, I mean, if you're Trek or Specialized or Canyon or whoever, or Stevens or whomever, bikes or bike-related stuff, the, you know... For what it's worth, Peter Sagan wearing the world champion's jersey means an awful lot to Specialized. I mean, when he's talking about when they're talking about Tinkoff going away, Specialized will supplement, it is alleged, will help supplement his salary to whatever team he goes to, so long as he's riding a Specialized bike.
Right, and that's why Katusha's at the top of the list.
What's that?
That's why whatchamacallit? The Kazakh team.
Yes.
Astana, yeah.
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 So, yeah. They're not all bad. We like some of them.
No, but I mean, I'd say put it down, because if you put it down to the U23 level, now you're bringing more support to them. You're bringing more money. Money means support. Money means access.
Yeah. Okay, so that's basically it, unless we go to the UCI points table. Did you guys want to talk about that at all? It's basically that the men and women U23 points are the same now.
Amen.
All right.
For continental championships and national championships, they just bumped that all up and made those the same and X'd out the women U23. It's the same as for the men, and that's that. So...
Even I can't bring myself to actually have a conversation about that.
Yeah, that's kind of dry. But it's a good, you know.
No, it's good. It's
good. A good move, right? It should be the same. There should be no difference. So, all right. So, guys, we've covered it.
Yes.
Overall thoughts. Thoughts.
When we proposed this idea, I believe it was David who was like, "Are we really going to be able to talk for an hour about these rule changes?"
And 90 minutes
and
later,
Scott and I were like, "It won't be a problem."
We could talk 90 minutes about anything, can't we?
We could talk 90 minutes with no topic.
Yeah, exactly. So. Scott, I do. We talked about it earlier. Even though it seems like it may be a little bit of a conflict, both you and I are involved in cyclocross clinics that are coming up, sadly, on the same weekend, but something that I think we should let people know that both of them exist. August 12th, we're doing a Friday night event through the 14th in Washington, D.C. We're once again having Jeremy Powers come down and host a D.C., Washington, D.C. cyclocross camp, and would love to have anybody, you know, who wants to do it to come down there. It's going to be on DCCX grounds, Armed Forces Retirement Home in Washington, D.C., where we hold DCCX, so you'll get a good look at a UCI C2 course while you're learning all the essential skills and drills that you'll need for the upcoming season. You can go to bikereg.com. Just search for Jeremy Powers or DC Cyclocross Camp, and it should come up, and we would love to see you there. Scott.
Yeah, well, and I just want to say, Bill, that sounds awesome, and it was cool hearing Jeremy talk about that on the last show. That was very cool. So, yeah, Saturday, August 13th. This is just a one-day clinic with Katie Compton and Robert Marion. This is through Cincinnati CX. If you go to bikereg.com and just search for Cincinnati CX, it will come up. Katie Compton, Robert Marion. There is an adult clinic from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. That is $90, includes lunch. And then there is a junior clinic, which will be taught by the women of Women's CX Project.
Oh, great.
To the junior girls. That is just a 3-hour clinic. That is only $25, and they get lunch, too, for that. So August 13th, Katie Compton and Robert Marion will be in Cincinnati. That is at Kingswood Park in Mason, Ohio. It is where the King CX race is, so everybody should be able to find that. So go to either clinic, guys. They're both just awesome stuff. I mean, you got the... You know, the best women's racer in the country right now, and then the best and the two national champions. You know what else?
Right,
can
and
you
then
ask for?
Holy cow!
Is the
just
odd
go
man out on this one.
Just go and yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, just go listen to Robert Marion talk.
Yeah, yeah. But I would say I don't have a camp. I have attended camps, and the value. No, I'm being serious here. The value of attending a camp, you can read skills, drills, and belly aches, and you should. You can watch the videos, and you should. But the skills of going to a camp and learning from someone that really knows what they're talking about, not your neighborhood, well, depending, I guess, in which neighborhood you live, but not just the strong guy that beats you in the Cat Fives every week, but really learning from somebody that knows what they're doing, huge, huge value, worth every dollar you're spending to support the sport, support the projects that we all get all hyped up about and involved in. Scott, I will ask you, though, I do have a question. You said that for the Juniors Clinic, was this Women's CX project leading the junior women? Is it only for women, or is it all juniors, that
yes,
clinic?
You know, it is for oh, you know what? That's a good question. I don't know. I'd have to check. You can check on Bike Reg. It'll tell you. I can't remember.
I think there's a value for everyone, whether they're junior men, junior women, yep, or adults. Go out there and go to a camp. If you can't attend either of these two, find one. There's tremendous value. The racing is more fun when you know what you're doing.
Yeah, and just to add on what David was saying, you know, with skills, drills, and belly aches, I think it is a book that we basically wrote it after running a lot of these camps and clinics. So a lot of what you are going to learn, either in that Cincinnati or DC camp or wherever else, will be complemented by this book, and you can get it at cyclocrossbook.com. Also available on Amazon.
Now, are you going to do a version update for that coincides with the UCI rule version? Yeah.
We are, you know, it's interesting. It's,
a U-turn version?
2013 book, I think it still holds up. But yeah, in the next year or so, I think we'll probably be looking to see what we can do for a cool next edition.
The verbiage. Nice. Skills to add.
Before you send us on our way, Scott, the last thing piece of business I did want to mention is that this show is part of the Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network. And I am extremely happy that I'm able to bring Scott and David and what we used to do and the Cyclocross Network over here. So really TDDTIE, now part of the Wide Angle Podium Network as well. I'd ask everybody, I know I say it every time, but it's really important. Go to wideanglepodium.com. Go check out the other shows, the Slow Ride Podcast. You have to listen to the last episode of the Slow Ride Podcast, the one that's called Lukewarm, if you are a fan of bike racing and also a fan of what is becoming amazing improv comedy. What they do on that show had me like rolling in my car sitting in traffic. It was so freaking funny.
Oh man, Spencer, I've got it downloaded,
Spencer Howes,
but I haven't listened.
Yeah, so Lukewarm Undercover Crit, I think Road Race Reporter, amazing. So go check out Slow Ride Podcast. Adam Meyerson is doing just really cool stuff with the Meyerson line. That one, you know, it's available audio, it's listenable, but it's also cool just to go and he broadcasts it live. Go to Blab TV, go check that out. The Honest Bicycle program, also the music podcast I do with my friends, Kids Don't Follow. We're going to be recording a new episode for that as well soon. All of this is to say, how we are able to do this, we'll do it anyway. How are we able to do this well and make it something that can sustain itself is by having people join the podcast network. You can donate to your favorite shows. You don't have to donate to everyone, but that way you're sort of helping out. You're giving back and you're making us, you know, making it easier for us to give you this content every week.
Yes, absolutely. All right, Bill, how can people get a hold of you personally?
Twitter at CXHairs, also on Instagram. I'll be heading back to Europe in a couple weeks for the next round of the Mountain Bike World Cup. So check out not only my Instagram, but also the Trek Factory Racing XC Instagram. And on their website, I'll be doing some more trailside dailies for them. Those have been tons
Which
of fun.
Awesome, dude. Awesome job on those too, by the way.
Thanks. Great. Yeah, so follow along with those, and also to really, you know, any questions, comments you have about the show for all of us, you know, the general email for that, just feedback@cxhairs.com.
Mr. David Palin.
Hey, that's it. Mr. David Palin on Twitter and that other thing there they call Instagrams. That's the best way to find me.
All right. And I am at CyclocrossNet on Twitter, Instagram, Cyclocross_network, or just CyclocrossNetwork@gmail.com if you want to shoot me an email. Guys, thanks again for another show. We'll do probably another one before the season starts. We're going to have a season preview probably. And then once again, once the Cyclocross season starts, you know, we say we still got a little ways, but guys, our team camp is in August.
It's coming up fast.
Which means we got to start prepping in July, which is like, what?
Next
couple,
month.
Couple weeks away?
Weeks.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. So
We're starting to chop down the foliage at the Armed Forces Retirement Home already.
Yeah, so CX is not only coming, it's already here. So let's get on with it. Guys, thanks again, and we'll talk to you next time.
Later on.